Hey, hi everybody. Come on in. Great to have you all with us. Did you guys get a little sheet, a little fill out kind of deal? There you go. Fill in the blank. There we go. We kind of had some technical difficulties, so sorry about the PowerPoint. We had all the fill in the blanks. I'll just have to blankety blank with it, with you, and we'll do it. Great to be with you guys. I am a professor now at Southern Wesleyan University. I've been at it for a little over a year and a half. Before that, I was a pastor in the Northwoods of Wisconsin amongst God's frozen chosen way up in the north in northern Wisconsin, Hayward, Wisconsin, population 2,100 in this little town. I moved to Hayward from Southern California. You know, California, the land of fruits and nuts, you know, that place. No, and I had been a youth pastor out in California, and then made this way to this frozen tundra, and I thought I'd been sentenced to Siberia. I really did, showing up at this place. So I remember walking into the church, the very first prayer meeting that we had. I walked into the men's room in the north woods of Wisconsin. Men's room. Walk in, there's a bat drowned in the toilet. Just face down, you know, and I'm like, I'd never seen that in California. That had never once happened, that a bat would be in the toilet. So I ran out and grabbed one of the trustees and I said, excuse me, we've got an emergency. Yeah, come here, quick. So he comes into the men's room and he looks in there and I said, what's this? He says, well, it's a bat. I said, well, what's it doing in the toilet? He said, looks like a dead bat's float to me. I said, well, what do you do about this? And he says, pretty simple. Right down he went. Royal flush right there. Now, I thought when I came to Hayward, I'd be there about 3 years. I figured that would be my training ground so then I'd get to go do my real ministry. And 26 years later, I was still there. And God was saying, this is your real ministry. And now that I'm a professor, you know, God moved me out. I have 26 years, and I will talk about that a little bit later. But when he moved me out, and now as I look back on it, there are two things that I know now that I didn't know in year 25. Looking back. One is I didn't know how heavy the load was that I was carrying. I didn't even realize because I was just doing it. And I didn't know the weight of it. And the other thing I didn't know was how rich it is to be a pastor. I just didn't realize. It didn't dawn on me the depth and the richness of it. So, you know, I'm a professor, but I still say I'm really a pastor, just cleverly disguised as a professor. I still do the pastor stuff. But there's nothing like being a pastor on the front line and doing the stuff day in, day out. And maybe some of you guys are weary and well-doing and you're wondering, okay, how do I make this for the long haul? How do I do this? And this is what I would like to talk about just a little bit today. I'm sorry we don't have our slides, but hopefully you can follow along with your fill-in-the-blank deal, and we'll get going. Lord, we pray that you would bless this time and just bring one thing, one big take-home that we're supposed to apply to our lives, and that would be good enough. And we thank you, Lord, for what you're going to do in our hearts and lives and our ministries today. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, how many of you have been in your church for 7 years or more? Pastors, spouses, raise your hand. 7 years or more. Wow, awesome. Okay, how many 10 years or more? 15, 20, 25, 30. You got 30? How many?
33.
33. Can anybody be 33? 33. Oh, going once, going to, you 33. Well, ready to go. You're going to come up and you're going to help me do this seminar here. How to, because I couldn't make it to 30. I tell you what, I kind of died out at 26. That's, where do you serve?
Serving right above Richmond, Virginia. Over was in church in
Montclair,
Virginia.
Wow, cool. Well, God bless you. That's just awesome. That's awesome. You're my hero. That's just beautiful. So ministry, it takes a lot. Isn't it interesting? Like when people introduce me now as a professor, they say he's a professor and he was a pastor at the same place for 26 years. That's how they introduce me. Like they don't do that for like the plumbers. He was a plumber for 26 years in the same community. So what? You know, I mean, they don't do that for school teachers, funeral directors, but they do it for pastors. Pastors and NFL football players. I mean, those are the ones. Now, what is that? Why is that? And it's because, I mean, there is tremendous stress to it. And there are lots of complicated things that happen with it, right? I mean, there's just a lot of complexity that's tied into this pastor stuff. And so it takes a lot of doing to get 33 years. It really does. Okay, so here we go. Let me just kind of walk through. I came up with 8 things. I could have come up with about 80, but I thought with a seminar like this, we better just stick with 8. Ways to thrive and bloom right where you're planted, so you can be in one place for a long time. All right, so that's kind of what we're talking about today. Number one, for right off the bat, number one is clarify your identity and your calling. Clarify your identity and your calling. Your identity. Now, you hear this a lot, right? I mean, people sing songs about it now. I'm no longer slave to fear. Sermons are about identity. I'll bet you anything that every preacher here, you preached something about identity at some point or another within the last couple of years. Who you are in Christ. But what I have found in my life, my identity as a pastor was so intertwined with my personhood that when I was extricating from Hayward, when I knew I had to leave Hayward, it was time. I had to go to a counselor about that to figure it all out because my identity was so wrapped up into it. Who am I if I'm not Pastor Mark? Who am I? And my counselor asked these questions to me. He said, I want you to answer these questions. He said, who are you? Who are you? And what are you like? And what are you worth? And what are you going to do when you grow up? Those are great questions. Who am I? What am I like? What am I worth? What am I going to be when I grow up? And one thing I realized was when I began to answer the question about who am I, it was really hard for me to answer that outside of my calling and role of being a pastor. But we need to clarify our identity. Like, we are not what we have. We are not what we do. We are not what people think. We're not what we've been through. We are sons and daughters of the Most High God, and we can rest in that joy. It's all about relationship. And so when we think about our identity, who we are, then we serve out of that relationship, sonship and daughtership. What is my calling? What are you called to do? That's the question. Clarify your identity and your calling. So what are you called to do? We have a clue of this in Acts chapter 6, where the apostle said, it's not good for us to be waiting on tables. Our job is to do prayer, ministry of prayer, ministry of the word. I'd throw another one in, ministry of equipping others to do ministry, because they did that. They equipped others to serve the tables. Now, it wasn't that the apostles were too good to serve tables, and certainly every pastor in here, you've folded tables, haven't you? And you've pushed brooms and mopped at stuff. I mean, you've done that. That's all in the job description. It comes under the place called and other as needed. You're in there. But the question you really need to ask yourself is, if I look at my week, am I living what I'm called to do? Am I really living out my calling? And your calling will be a little bit different than somebody else. The job of ministry, there's 4 parts, I figured. I mean, maybe there's more than that, but I can't think of anything better. Okay, it's to preach, to pray, to lead, and to love. That's the job description of a pastor. Preach, pray, lead, and love. When I say pastor, pastor spouse, well, you preach too. You preach the sermon, you know, in between, right? And you pray a lot, and you love, and you help lead too, or at least you help navigate your spouse's rantings when they come home for board meeting and stuff. But preach, pray, lead, and love. Those are the four. And you probably have one of those, Pastor, that is like your primary one. Like, maybe, like, you're just gifted as a preacher. You're a preacher. That's what you do. And so, that's your strength. Or maybe it's pastoral relationship. It's loving. And you're really good at going to the coffee shop, sitting down and doing some counseling and loving on people. Or maybe you're a leader. I mean, that's just how you're wired. You see things that need to be done. You get on it. Let's make this thing happen. Or maybe it's out of your spirituality. That's your main way of pastoring is in your prayer life and your discipling and your devotional part. Now, we need to do all those. Those are all very important, of course, and the spiritual realm is the essential to everything. But there might be one of these that's more in line with your gifting than another. So let's say that loving is your main one, that you're just really, you love hospital visits. I didn't even think I would miss hospital visits until I quit doing them. I mean, I hated having to go to the hospital. And then now that I'm not doing it, I love hospital visits. I think that loving was really part of my calling. It really was a big part of it, more so than leading, actually, for me. Like, if you were a megachurch pastor, senior pastor of that, and then you need to lead. It needs to be that for you. And so, like, let's say that you're in a context where your gifting is one thing, and then your non-gifting is there, and you're called to live in that, in the non-gift stuff. That creates something for you. And here's the way it works then. See, God calls you to something. And so if He's calling you to this, He's going to give you grace for it, or He's going to help you figure out another way to get it done. I mean, He will. He'll do that for you. He did that for Moses. Moses couldn't talk, and he had to talk. And so what happens? Well, God sends Aaron along, and then actually Moses ends up doing it. I mean, he ends up doing what he needs to do until his time goes and he's gone on to glory. And He'll do that for you. So whatever He calls you to, He's going to give you grace for it, so you're not just grinding, 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 grinding all the time. If it's a constant grind, it means that either you're in the wrong place or you're going about it the wrong way. So you want to look at one of those kinds of things. Clarify your calling. Like, has God wired you more to be a leader? And you're not able to lead? Or is He calling you to love people, but you're caught up in all this administrative stuff? Is He calling you more to be a spiritual mentor and guide, but your schedule's too crazy so you can't do it? Is He calling you to preach, but you don't have time to prepare your sermons? So whatever that area is that's the sweetest spot for you, it's really important to live into that, because that's how He wired you. And if you don't do what He's calling you to do, what He wired you to do, you're going to wilt. You'll be frustrated. You can reorganize your schedule for that. So anyway, the question is your identity. It isn't what you do. It's who He is and who you are. Just like the Apostle Paul said, right? When he got knocked off his high horse on the Damascus Road, he asked two questions. He said, Lord, who are you and what do you want me to do? And you say those two things. Lord, who are you? And then who am I in light of who you are? And then, Lord, what do you want me to do? And then I'm going to do it. All right, number two. Dig wells of spiritual replenishment. Dig wells of spiritual replenishment. Now, nobody else is going to take responsibility for your spiritual replenishment. Nobody. They're not. They're not going to do it. Your board members aren't going to do it. They're just not going to do it. I mean, they might give you a note at Pastor Appreciation Month and stuff like that, but they're not going to take responsibility for your spiritual replenishment. In fact, what I found is that I had to fight for that. I had to just fight for it. If I didn't fight for it, I wasn't going to get it. And so that's true for you too, I'm pretty sure. That other people are going to have agendas for your life. And it's up to you to say, what do I need to thrive spiritually? And then if I can do what I need to thrive spiritually, then they're going to thrive spiritually. And if I'm just like dehydrated spiritually and just running on fumes and exhausted, well then how's that going to help them? That means that you have to find your pathway and just really live into that. Now, here's a thought on this. There are really four basic love languages, I think. This is just an idea that I've been pondering. Four love God languages. You know, just like, have you guys seen the book called The Love Language, The Five Love Languages? Well, I say there are four love God languages. And Jesus talks about that. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, your mind, and your strength. And so these are all like pathways of spiritual replenishment. And so, like, for instance, those of you who love God with all their heart, these are the passion people. Like, they just love it. So, like, last night when they did the thing and they started singing at the end, and the people that stood up first and went like this first, those are the heart people right there. Like, now, there are other people that sit in the back and go, oh, no, I don't want to stand up. Do I really have to stand up? I'm not going to stand up until they make me stand up. I'm going to sit as long as I possibly can. That, you're probably not one of those heart people. The heart people is like, yeah, I love Jesus. I mean, that they just love it. So, like, for them, their spiritual, like, renewal place, replenishment, they would just listen to praise music and just really be in this just full throttle, just love Jesus. Oh, that's heart. Okay, soul is the more contemplative person. The contemplative, that's the person that would want to get away on a little private prayer retreat. They do a lot of journaling and stuff like that. They ponder some of the deeper things. It's to have a day of silence and solitude. Oh, that's glory. That would just be glorious. So like, you know, Henry Nouwen type stuff, Richard Foster kind of thing like that. That would be the soul. The mind people, they're the ones that really think through stuff. They would love a deep Bible study. They just like to dig it out, just really dig it down and get to the bottom line truth. And, oh, that will preach right there. Oh, that's good. Oh, that's so good. You know, just really dig stuff out. Love theology and that kind of thing. And then the strength people are the doers. Let's get something done around here. Let's quit sitting around and singing kumbaya. Let's make something happen. Let's get this thing done. And so, like, these are like some of the action kind of people, the visionary leader people, the social justice people. A lot of those guys are the doer. So, okay, it's heart and soul and mind and strength. Now, most everybody, we're wired really strongly in maybe one, two of those, and not so much in one or two of those. So, how many of today you say, I'm a heart person. I love music and that kind of stuff. Raise your hand if you're a heart. Raise your hand. Okay, yeah. Both hands. Okay, how about soul? The contemplative, get alone with Jesus. Okay, yeah. Okay, how about the mind? You're deep well thinkers and all that. Okay, and then how about the action-oriented people? There you go. Look at that. Isn't that amazing? It's about a quarter. I've done this now four times as I've been pondering this theory, and every single time I've done it, the audience is divided out into four. That's amazing. So a couple of things on that. If that's true, what I'm saying, then whatever yours is, sing that song. Just live into that. If you need music to thrive spiritually, then do music. If you need some good, deep, robust theological conversation, then do the robust theological conversation. Whatever it is that's your main thing, live into it. But Jesus doesn't say love God with all your heart or soul or mind or strength. He says and. And so my thought here is that you live into your big one, right? And then expand the other one. So if you haven't read a theology book since you took theology class way back, you know, 40 years ago, might be time to dust it off and read another one. I mean, there's some good theology thoughts out there, even if that's not your thing. And if you're the kind of guy that just, hey, you hate standing up for singing. Maybe just the next time, just like tonight, you be the first one. Just pop up and go like this. I mean, you know, just go for it. Just go for it. Stretch it out a little bit. Love God with all your heart, your soul, your mind. Those are the pathways of spiritual replenishment. And Gwen Jackson wrote a great book. Have you guys seen her book? About the rhythms, sacred rhythms. Some people are more daily people. Some are weekly people. Some are more seasonal kind of people. You got to find your pattern, your pathway. So the way you do it isn't necessarily the way somebody else is going to do it. And you don't have to fall into King Saul's armor in this. But we need to find your pathway of spiritual renewal so that you can thrive and be vibrant in your life. Go to the well. Dig the well so it's like bubbling up inside of you. That's the way, I think, to make it. Because ministry's hard. It's hard. You gotta dig wells. Number three, love the people. That's all of them, all right? Love the people. And beware of codependency. Love the people. That's something that's been something that Kathy has said over and over again. There was a little old lady that she lived with when we were in college, and she was going to marry me. And Kathy was asking this little old lady, she goes, what advice do you have? I'm going to be a pastor's wife. And Kathy, what did Carol say? She just said, love the people. Just love the people. You do that, and I'll take care of just about everything. And some of them are hard to love. I mean, you know, they're prickly. They're like porcupines or skunks. That's hard to love them. Well, you know, you don't want to pet a porcupine and you want to stay on the front end of the skunk. But you love them anyway, right? You love them anyway. What I've found, I think that probably for Hayward, that was probably the most important thing. For staying a long time with these guys. Because I loved them. And even when they didn't love me back, I still loved them. Now, beware of codependency. And you can slip into that really quick. Anybody here a people pleaser? Any of those? Oh, okay. Yeah, you're people. That's good for you. Great. That's wonderful. That's wonderful to be a people pleaser. In fact, this is another thing that Kathy taught me. She's wise. I married up. She said, you know, when you love people, you're going to want to please them. Right? You don't want to displease them if you love people. Why would you do that? She goes, I don't think the issue is people pleasing. She said, I think it's people impressing. It isn't people pleasing. I mean, of course you want to please people. Now, sometimes you can't. And so then they don't get impressed with you so much. And then there's a problem when they're not, well, that's about us, isn't it? It isn't about them. It's about what they think about us. That's the big question. So this means with codependency, we need to have some healthy, permeable boundaries in this thing. Because there are some dysfunctional people out there, and I'll bet one or two of them made their way into your church. I remember the day when the chains of dysfunction of this codependency thing fell away on me. Because I was so concerned of what people would think, and I didn't want to upset anybody about anything, and wanted everybody to be happy, and well, that's an impossible job. But I thought I'd try. Didn't work. One day there's this lady who calls. And it was tough because, see, it had been a long stretch and I'd been out every night of the week and we had five little kids and I'd promised them we're going to stay home, we're going to eat popcorn and have movies and we're putting blankets out on the living room and popping the popcorn and the telephone rings. And there was this lady who was mad about something. I answered the phone. That's a mistake, by the way. You don't have to answer the phone. You don't have to, and particularly if you get with your cell phones out. See, I never gave my cell phone out to people because I lived in the dark ages. And so now you guys, you all have, everybody's got your number. You don't have to answer it. You say, no. So anyway, but I answered it that day. I answered it. And this lady went, you know, Pastor, my husband and I, we're just really upset about some decisions that the board has made. And actually, we're really seriously considering leaving the church. And we want you to come over to our house tonight so we can hash this out. The popcorn's popping. Stupid, stupid me. You know what I did? I said, oh no, I don't want you to leave the church. Oh, no, I tell you what, I'll be right over. I'll be right there. I hung up the phone. I turn around and I look, and there are my kids. And they're looking at me like, where are you going, Dad? I thought this was popcorn and movie night. And at that moment, the clue phone rang for Mr. Wilson. He said, you are an idiot. This is stupid. Why would you do that? Why would you sacrifice a promise you made to your kids to try to appease some disgruntled person that's going to be upset about something else next week, right? So, oh man, this was so hard because I'm so non-confrontational. It was so hard. But I said, kids, you're right. You're right. This is popcorn and movie night, and we're going to do it. And they're watching me. And I pick up the phone, and I call her back. And I said, you know, I told you I was coming, but I'm sorry. I had already made a promise to my kids that tonight was popcorn and movie night, and I got to keep my promise to my kids. So I'm sorry. I can meet with you later on this week, tomorrow, whatever, but I can't meet you tonight. She didn't understand that. But my kids did. Oh, man, that popcorn was the most delicious popcorn I ever had in my life. And I lost that couple that day. They went down the street to the Baptist church and they afflicted another pastor. And I kept my kids. And you know, you know what? It's interesting. Now that was a long, long, long time ago. And there was enough time that had passed. Those people were totally gone out of the community and all that by then. And nobody would have any clue about who this could possibly be. So I thought, I'm going to brave it. And I'm going to just tell that story at my church on a Sunday morning. I actually told the story. And when I told the story, the congregation gave me a standing ovation. And I was like, wow, my people don't want me to be this person that's all uptight about trying to please every little person and trying to make everything. They want me to be a healthy father. They want me to be a loving husband. That's what they want from me. That's what they need from me. Yeah, their little crisis of a particular moment, they may not be saying that, but in the big picture, that's what they want. So let's not give in to codependency here. So that's where we gain our worth, by what those people think. And we don't have to gain our worth by that. Our worth is what he thinks, right? And we have one calling, we have one identity, and we are the beloved, and we're going to live in that love and live in the overflow. Amen? Okay, let's keep moving on. I have no clue what time it is. There's no clock on the back of this room. Give a preacher that. What a dangerous thing. Okay, here we go. We got tracks to make. Okay, number four. Embrace the place and pastor the whole community. Embrace the place and pastor the whole community. Like, Hayward is not a thriving metropolis. Well, Jack, you know. I mean, Jack came after me. He was the interim pastor that really helped our church a lot. Oh, God bless you, sir. I will always be grateful to you. But you know, it's not, how many stoplights? Like three? I think they added a stoplight when we came. I think there were two stoplights when we came to town, and like it was an hour and a half to Burger King. So our kids, we'd load them up in the van. They'd be singing, "Soon and very soon, we're going to Burger King. We're going." That's what they sang, all the way, hour and a half to Burger King. It's not on the way to anywhere, and so. You know, if a person has a bad attitude about it, they're like, I'm in the backside of nowhere. I mean, well, here I am, stuck in the middle of nowhere. This is the most horrible, awful thing. Boy, someday I'm going to have a real ministry. They stick me in the backside of nowhere. One thing that helped me out, though, the other day, I was, well, not the other day, but the other year, back up in the North Woods, there's this little teeny tiny town. Jack, you know Solon Springs? You know this? Yeah, in Solon Springs, they have this bank right on the corner there, tiny little bank called First National Bank. Oh, that's kind of funny, actually. I mean, National Bank, and it's in Solon Springs, and First. There it was. But you know what? For the people of Solon Springs, that was the first bank. And it's their touch to the nation. You know, I mean, it was really, really, really important for them. I mean, it's not Wall Street, but hey, it's the best bank in Solon Springs. And that's kind of how I thought about it in Hayward, right? Okay, well, yeah, we're never going to be a mega church. I mean, that's not going to happen because there aren't that many people in the county to be, maybe, you know, 12 stone. They have more people in their bathrooms at any given moment than we have in our county. How could you possibly? But you got to embrace the place. If you have resentment against the place, they're going to feel that. If you think that they're stupid or think that they're, you know, whatever, they're backward or whatever. If you have that attitude or mindset going into it, they're going to pick that up right away. And they're way smarter than you could ever imagine that they are. They really are. No matter what town you're in. So you want to embrace that place. And then pastor or shepherd the entire community. Not just the people that are sitting in your pews. If you're just stuck with the people in your pews, that's a pretty small potato thing, right? But think way bigger than that. Like, how can I love everybody in this whole community? Yeah, so what if they're Baptists? Love them anyway. You can love Baptists. You can love the Catholics. Just love them all. Just love them all. You're going to be their shepherd. You're going to be a blessing from Jesus to the Baptists and the Catholics and the pagans and whoever, wherever you go. You know what that means? That if you embrace this, and the longer that you go in the same community, here's what happens. The more meaningful relationships you build. And so here's what happens then. Every trip you take is a short-term mission trip. Trip to the hardware store. Short-term mission trip. Right there. You know, go to Walmart. Short-term mission. Think of it like that. Lord, send me on a mission. Help me to be a blessing. Whether they come to my church, whether they don't, I just want to live a life like Jesus everywhere I go. And when I do that, Jesus is going to shine. And then I'm responsible for spiritual care for a whole community. So when I say, tell me about your ministry, don't say, well, I got a little church of like 12 people, and that's what I... Hey, Jesus had 12 people too. That was awesome. He changed the whole world, turned it upside down. And Jesus didn't say, hey, well, I just got a small little... They're a bunch of dysfunctional 12. That's all I got. You see my church board, they're terrible. You know, and he could have said that. But what did he do? The whole world. You can think this way, see? Just love your whole community, pastor the whole community. Okay, number five. Create breathing space through scheduling and delegation. Create breathing space through scheduling and delegation. And actually with delegation, it really fits into schedule. Those two things, scheduling and delegation, fall into one word. And that's called planning. You just plan ahead. It took me a while to figure that out. I thought things would just unfold magically. And then I realized all along that Kathy was the one doing the unfolding. You know, just she figured it all out ahead of time. Oh, I thought these things just happened. They don't. You got to plan. You got to think. You got to put it out there. So, like, if you don't plan ahead, what happens is everything's a crisis all the time. Always crisis, 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 crisis. And if you can't do it, if you're just not wired that way, you don't think, then somebody else can help you figure it out. But you got to do this. Like, here's what I mean. One thing by scheduling. Here's just an idea. Like being a small town pastor in a church group, fairly large for a small town, that meant that I was asked to do a lot of weddings. Lots and lots and lots and lots of weddings. Like almost like every other week I was doing a wedding. And that can be pretty exhausting. And I used to ask the bride, I just asked her, the dumbest thing, I'd say, when would you like your wedding rehearsal to be? And then they'd tell me, one would tell me 6 o'clock, one would say 2 o'clock, one would say 4 o'clock. They're just all over the map. after about 10 years, one day it just kind of, I'm going to set rehearsals at 4 o'clock. And then if they can't do it, they'll tell me. And I'll say, okay, we'll do a rehearsal at 4 o'clock. What do you think? Okay. And like they always did it at 4 o'clock. You know what that meant? I could run a snappy rehearsal that would be done by 4:45. That meant I get to go on a date with my wife that night instead of being stuck at the church with a wedding rehearsal. Now, that's just planning ahead. You can do this with lots of things. Okay, look at your schedule and say, okay, what are the places where I'm just taking me out at night and just sucking extra energy out of my life? And then is there any way I can consolidate that stuff and put it together? So like I would meet with couples premarital counseling and stuff or other issues people wanted to meet with me. I always met with people right after church on Sunday. And it saved me lots of nights out because they all work Monday through Friday, you know, and so I, by just putting it there, that slot saved me a ton of time evenings out. That's just one simple little thing that really might help. They do want to get to lunch. That's right. That's right. So tell me about your marriage problem. We have no problem. We have no problem. Let's go eat wings. Okay, great. I'm glad I fixed that. Okay, good, good, good. So scheduling and so just thinking ahead. What I've learned is that we all operate out of a calendar hub. And so, like, some people just operate out of a daily calendar hub. Like, what am I going to do today? They wake up in the morning and say, I wonder what I'm going to do today. I mean, there are a few that's how they operate. They don't even know what they're going to do the night before until they get up in the morning and say, what do I do today? There are others that operate in a weekly pattern. And so, well, what do I got to do this week? And so maybe on Monday you sit down, you wipe it all out for the week. And most pastors are there. That's usually where pastors are, is in the week. And what I found is as my ministry began to expand and there were other things that I was doing besides just this, I had to broaden that. And so for me it was about 6 to 8. Now it doesn't mean that every detail of every day was planned out all the way, but all the biggies were. And like, so I'm going to have some time for replenishment. I'm going to put it here, 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 and here. And I'm going to have some counseling spots, probably this afternoon, this one, and this one. And I need to do some planning for that big event. I'll do that maybe over here, 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 and here. And so putting that out weeks out, what would happen then is somebody would call and say, Pastor, can I come meet with you right now? And I'd say, ooh, but you know what? I'm already scheduled. Because I am, because I scheduled it. It's amazing. Just the word schedule. Just say that. And it's like the red letter King James Version. Okay. Well, when can I do it? Okay. Well, that's great. You can do it. How about Thursday at 4? Perfect. Yeah, they're great. Super. You know, and then boom. I'm in control of the schedule then. And so that really helped. It doesn't always work out. And so but I think by scheduling enough breathing space and flexibility between things, and actually another thing I scheduled was interruptions. I mean, I just had lots of space in there so that if somebody happened to stop by, hey, Pastor, I thought I'd just come by. I didn't have anything else to do this afternoon. I thought I'd just spend some time with you. And as I, okay. But I had some space for that. Not for 2 hours though, because my schedule wouldn't permit it. That's because I had to plan ahead for that. If you don't do that, you're a sitting duck. You're going to sit there and they're going to talk your leg off for 2.5 hours. And you're going to be wishing that Jesus would call you home right there. And then delegation, this one, I'll bet you anything that there are a lot of people in the room here that you're doing stuff that other people ought to be doing. And that's a challenge because, I mean, you want it to be done right, right? Is that why you do it? Or it's like, well, but no, I can't find anybody to do it. But there probably is somebody to do it. It's just a matter of that prior planning. It goes back to that. Like if you go out a few weeks out, if you ask somebody to do something for you tomorrow, they'll tell you no every time. But if you're doing the 6 to 8 week thing and you say 6 weeks from now, hey, 6 weeks from now, I got this little thing. Would you be willing to help out with the cookies for that? Yes, I'd be glad. See, everybody overestimates what they can do 6 weeks from now. So there you got it. And then they're guilt-laden, so they have to bring the cookies when it comes. Worked great. So, but why do we not delegate? The reason, I think, is we want quality. We want to make sure it's done right. Isn't that why? But bottom line is, if it's about 75% right, unless it's something that's mission critical, just let them have it anyway. You know what? And you get 10 people doing it at 75, that's 750. Well, that's pretty good. That's way better than your 100. 750 beats 100 every time. So the quality control question is this: do you want quality or do you want control? Because you can't have both at the same time. You have to let go of some control in order to get the multiplication kind of quality. So your job is not like run it all, doing it all, carrying everything. Okay, that's about the delegation. Okay, wow, we are running out of time here. Okay, here we go. Number 6. Navigate anxiety with R plus T plus M. Now, once again, this is something I borrowed from my sweetheart, Kathy. She's wise. She's the wisest person I know. That all of us have anxiety that comes to us. I mean, the ministry, though, is being a non-anxious presence. That's probably one of the best definitions of ministry I know. When you walk into the room, you are bringing a non-anxious presence. A lot of times I succeeded at that, and a lot of times I didn't. Sometimes at board meeting I became an anxious presence. But how do we navigate anxiety? It's going to happen. There's congregational anxiety. And sometimes you're actually called to create anxiety. to make a change, that creates anxiety, right? You ever had that happen? Like you had to do something and it creates backlash? Of course. That has to happen. You got to navigate it. And so R plus T plus M. This is solid gold. R is reality. That you just face reality. That the real picture. Not what you pretend that it would be. And so like, well, it's not that bad as it could be. You know, well, yeah, it probably is. or it's... You know, it could be, it's probably better than what you think of it if it's Monday. It's probably better. And it's probably not as good as what you thought on Easter Sunday as you're driving home. It's somewhere in between. What's the real reality? What's the real reality? And then once you really face that, the hard, brutal facts, boy, we are just so... We want to avoid that, but to face the real picture. What's the real deal? And then T is trust. Trust. I'm going to trust God with that reality. I'm going to identify it, but then I'm just going to trust Him that He's going to make it right. And then M is move. Just got to do something. Don't get stuck. Don't just sit there. Step out and do something. And a moving vehicle is a whole lot easier to push than one that's just sitting still. And that's true about a life. If you're on the move, God's going to help move you to the right place. Okay, we are almost to the landing point. Number 7 is renew the vision regularly. Although Laurel Buckingham and I were talking about this very morning, and you know, Laurel's been at it for 44 years, I think it was, the same church. Oh, man, he's my hero. And what he said was, it was always a process of reinvention. Maybe I would have rechanged this word to reinvent yourself and reinvent the program, reinvent the way you're doing it. You have to keep reinventing it, rethinking it. See, if you're stuck with the old pattern of the way you've always done it, you always just say, well, we're always going to do this on the first Thursday of February, and this will always be this or that. Pretty soon, that's called a rut, right? That's called a rut. You don't want to be in a rut. You've got to continually renew and reinvent. That means read a lot and think a lot and go to conferences like this and just expand your brain and your thinking. And then finally, the last one is to commit to healthy transitions. Commit to healthy transitions. Big changes always meant transition, and that's the emotional stuff that happens when you make a change. And so if you commit yourself, I'm going to be healthy. I'm going to handle this. I'm always take the high road. And then whenever, like if you go to a building program or you hire a new person or you have to fire the Sunday school teacher or whatever, those kind of transitions, I'm going to do this in the healthiest possible way. And there will be a time in your life where you're going to leave your church. Even my dear brother who's been there 33 years, there's going to be a day you're going to be leaving. That'll either be that you're going to retire or you're going to go to another ministry or they'll bury you out at the Greenwood Cemetery or what, but one of them. And so when that time comes, commit yourself to leaving well. To leaving well. That you don't go kicking and screaming and fighting and causing a scene or anything like that. You just go loving and blessing everybody. And when you love and bless everybody, you leave well. Then what happens is then they'll welcome you right back, see? And that was what happened just this Christmas. Kathy and I went back. And we were warmly invited, you know, and it was so beautiful that we could come and it wasn't wonky. It wasn't weird. It was just beautiful. And as we were driving back to South Carolina, and I said to Kathy, we're not homeless. We're not homeless. Because, see, when we move, then when you move, you're not there anymore. But the new place doesn't feel like home yet. And as I was driving back this Christmas, I said, we're not homeless. We have two homes. We have two homes. We have our southern home and we have our northern home. And I love both those homes. Okay, well, we are just about there. All done. Let me say a prayer with you. And then, let me just ask a question. I have time for maybe one. If anybody have just a quick question or anything that anybody want to ask before we bail? Okay, I'll pray, say a prayer with you and we'll go. Lord, thank you for being with us. Guide us, lead us. Help us to serve you well for the long haul. And Lord, thank you for the gift that you've given to us to serve others and to serve you. We praise you and we love you. In Jesus' name, amen.